All right. You know, where I am in this neck of the woods, any slight drizzle creates a major problem. But that was Dr. Lonnie Smith on his Hammond B3 with Play It Back. It was from his 2016 album, Evolution. Smith, now 73, has performed a wide range of genres, gospel, classical, jazz, and R&B, but is well known for his preference for venues that bring him close to his music fans. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the news out of the Caribbean, of course, is everybody's watching to see what Hurricane Matthew, a Category 4 storm that is now seeming to kind of let up a little bit, but it lashed Haiti and Cuba and Jamaica, and we're trying to just figure out how people are going to get through it. And as you know, Haiti has a soft spot, Jamaica too, in my heart. I am from the Caribbean, after all. And we'll be talking about that. But for the moment, it's a matter of everybody trying to hunker down and get to a safe spot until this is over. But today we'll be talking about the Clinton Foundation and the Trump Foundation, and raising very interesting questions about those two, as well as the role of State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, the State Attorney General of the state of New York. State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman saying that there is reason to believe there are major irregularities with the Trump Foundation's fundraising practices, and even with its legal status as a charity, just yesterday banned the foundation from soliciting funds in New York, where the foundation is registered, until it complies with state charity laws. Schneiderman, a high-profile Democrat, has not taken similar action against the Clinton Foundation, even though it has been for years the subject of multiple investigative reports centering on massive charity fraud. As you know, we've been doing a series on the Clinton Foundation, discussing today in this new edition Schneiderman's interestingly timed action and the serious questions it raises. Returning as our guide through the Clinton Foundation labyrinth is Charles Ortel, who has been studying and exposing what he calls the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in U.S. history. He's been studying it for 2 years. Hello, Charles. Good to have you with us again. Oh, wow. This is all, something is happening on your end, I'm sure. All right. Well, okay. We are going to be talking very shortly with Charles Ortel, and we are going to be discussing why it is that the prosecutor for the state of New York, State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, has been so selective about the Trump Foundation and kind of deliberately skirting, looking at the Clinton Foundation. What could be the reason for that? Because if we, in fact, do a comparison, it's not to say one is worse than the other or something like that. It is just that when you look at the timing, you look at the action that he took, you look at the amount of coverage it generated, and it was all about, you know, trouncing Trump and basically exempting Hillary Clinton. One looking at the way things turned out would reasonably conclude that Clinton was okay. She's in the clear, and Trump is not. Charles, good to have you with us.
Great, Eutrice. Thanks to be on with you.
Thanks. It's been a technical issue so far, but we'll muddle through.
Good.
What do you make of Eric Schneiderman, the state attorney general, determining just yesterday that the Trump Foundation should stop soliciting any funds at all until it proves that it is within the law in terms of fundraising, and that it has filed the proper papers, and that it is in fact a legal organization. I thought it was very interesting that he made that move, and yet staring him right in the eyes all these years is a Clinton Foundation that hasn't done anything. And in terms of filing its papers, in fact, it is, as you have been talking about, it's been illegally constituted and operating. And here we are, giving the public the impression that Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, Bill Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, they're all in the clear. It is Trump who ironically has the foundation problem.
Yeah, it is more than a little bit ironic, and I think quite indicative of the fact that the Attorney General of our state here in New York is a political hack. Let's go sort of chapter and verse through it. The law that he's referring to is actually a very smart law here in New York, which says that if you want to raise money, not if you want to solicit for contributions, before you even start raising money, that you have to fill out various paperwork. And the importance of the paperwork is that you have to disclose whether there are any defects in the records of the people who might be searching, might be trying to solicit funds. For example, have any of them ever been impeached for lying under oath and obstructing justice, as in Bill Clinton? And the answer to that question is yes. Has anyone ever been, anyone else associated with the Clinton Foundation ever been disciplined in an administrative proceeding for lying under oath? And that would be Ira Magaziner. So ordinarily, what New York is trying to make sure you do before you begin the process of going to our fellow citizens here, many of whom have substantial wealth and have high income and might like to avail themselves of the benefits of making tax-deductible contributions wherein their state taxes and city taxes are reduced, before you even dream of doing that, you got to make sure your paperwork is, in fact, filled out properly. Now, in the case of the Trump Foundation originally, in its early period, the Trump Foundation was basically taking money from Donald Trump. And you don't necessarily need to fill the forms out in the way that you might have to fill them out if you're raising money from the public broadly, the way the Clinton Foundation has always done. So I think on the one hand, it's a good thing that the Attorney General has made an issue of this law, which it has a very low threshold. $25,000 is all you have to say that you're going to raise inside our state, and you're supposed to fill out this paperwork. The Clinton Foundation has never validly filled out this paperwork, nor has it ever validly registered its far-flung empire with all of its offices, with all of its trustees, with all of their related party transactions. It had never done this. And in the case of the Trump Foundation, let's say we're talking about $50 million, which I think is high. In the case of the Clinton Foundation, we're talking about more than $2 billion from October 23, 1997 to the present of donations that they have declared in their books. So it's, you know, as a magnitude, it's a much larger thing. And when you're talking, you know, I believe Schneiderman is attacking Trump over the quality of his audits for his foundation. And the Clinton Foundation has never supplied a legally compliant audit for any part of its operation, anywhere inside or outside New York State, inside or outside the United States of America. It is a flagrant example of accounting fraud and charity solicitation fraud and operating fraud. And, you know, this is clearly a case. You know, if Schneiderman wants to make an issue of Trump, he has no choice, if he wants to retain his credibility, but to go after the Clinton Foundation as well. So, you know, that's why I say it's actually a welcome step.
Well, just the same, I mean, it is such a blatant statement of partisan politics where all of a sudden, given the timing, you know, you can't help but associate it to the announcement that the state attorney general has ordered that the Clinton, Trump Foundation cease and desist making any attempt at all to solicit funds because there's so much wrong here, and it can't find anything wrong with the Clinton Foundation. Despite it's right here in New York, registered in New York, based in New York, headed by a former president and former U.S. senator from New York. So you can't help but say there is something to this other than some procedural or administrative problem that Schneiderman was reviewing, and in the course of reviewing this, came up with this determination.
Well, yeah. I mean, here in New York, maybe some of your listeners are not aware of this, but Eric Schneiderman and Donald Trump have a blood feud going back years. And, you know, Trump, not being shy about his opinions, has made some very negative comments about Schneiderman over many, many years. So it's obvious that there's bad blood between Trump and Schneiderman. And beyond that, Schneiderman has signed up to be on the political campaign and a supporter for Hillary Clinton. So, by taking this move in New York, the way he's taken it, you know, what he's doing, which I think is a good thing, actually, is elevating the issue of just how serious a crime it is to solicit in the name of a charity that is not illegal, that is not legally organized and operated. That would be, as Schneiderman claims, the Trump Foundation. But the Clinton Foundation is an even worse case. And now that Schneiderman has done this in the days leading up to the election, I hope that other attorneys general around this country, I hope that other foreign governments will look at this case and say, you know what, this is a serious mess. The Clinton Foundation needs to be similarly barred from any more fundraising, and a conservator should be established over the Clinton Foundation because, what's going on in the Clinton Foundation, as I say, is far worse than anything Schneiderman may have alleged by taking this recent action.
Well, you had talked before about the power of the attorney general to just simply walk in and demand the books, shut the place down, and say, okay, we'll review and we'll tell you when you can crank it up again, because there has been no real close scrutiny of the Clinton Foundation at all. And this means that this is where the partisan politics comes in. You have a person who is the wife of a former president, who was herself the former senator of the state of New York, who is currently running for president, a very high-profile person in the Democratic Party. It is not likely if one follows the partisan thread here, it is not likely that such a person will come under scrutiny by a Democratic attorney general. You'll have to be a very unusual person, a very unusually independent person to do that. And Schneiderman, of course, is not. But doesn't that itself say to the public, look, you really have to rethink this business about political parties and how they work? Because it isn't necessarily about justice. Here it is, a very clear case. It suggests to me a tit-for-tat, a case of vengeance. We're going to go after Trump. This is the way we can disable him. This is the way we could negatively impact his campaign and possibly even his shot at being president. I'm not suggesting that people should vote for Trump, but I'm saying, In the scheme of things, this is how it works. So we see a blatant case here of the state attorney general coming to this decision at this time, coming to this particular decision, one that doesn't really look good in the public. When people tell you that you are banned from soliciting funds, there's something wrong with your foundation. And, of course, it provides Hillary Clinton with a very good argument about, the going argument about who's fit and who's not fit for president. So, in a way, is the U.S. Attorney General himself pretty much committing, because these are charges, nobody's found guilty of anything, an act of political sabotage?
Yeah, I would go further than that. I would say that, the Clinton, and I think you're talking about the New York Attorney General, but the business model, in quotes, of the Clintons, and indeed of, other politicians, but the business model of the Clintons is to lie under oath and then to obstruct justice. And that you see very clearly if you go back into Arkansas over many, many years, and then as time as president, and now with this Clinton Foundation, that's what they do. They lie under oath. They submit declarations under penalties of perjury concerning the foundation, which are wholly fanciful. They're not in compliance with applicable law. There's not a single one of them going back to October 23, 1997, that is in compliance with law. And it's not a question of a comma missing or a technical error. They're just boldly fraudulent, boldly wrong. And then the question becomes, well, how come nobody's looking into the Clinton Foundation? So in the IRS, the answer is Lois Lerner. You know, the Clintons arranged to put Lois Lerner into the IRS from the Federal Election Commission just as, you know, Bill was leaving. They put her into the IRS. And so for a long number of years, from 2001 all the way to 2013, as I alluded to in an article I wrote last year, the IRS did not audit the Clinton Foundation. They had, you know, the person who would have made that call to refer it for prosecution was Lois Lerner, and she obviously said, we're not doing that. Then who knows how many different people the Clintons had put into the Attorney General's office. You know, certainly Eric Holder was somebody who worked for Bill Clinton's Attorney General, Janet Reno, in the powerful position, I think it was, of Deputy Attorney General. So, you know, the Clintons have many loyalists scattered throughout federal, state government and acquaintances around the world. So they insert them into, you know, the federal government. And now here in this key state, you know, the governor, current governor of New York is Andrew Cuomo. He worked in the cabinet for Bill Clinton. You know, while Andrew's father and Bill were rivals, and there was a lot of strained relationships, I think, between the Cuomos and the Clintons way back when, you know, is Andrew Cuomo really going to buck the Clinton machine? I don't know. So the bad thing here is, you know, this is a moment in time when we think about the wider world and America, where big institutions, big established institutions are being disrupted right and left. Big companies, you name it. You know, General Motors, which was the most one of the biggest companies in the world, went bankrupt. GE nearly went bankrupt. AIG had to be rescued. You know, all these old behemoth companies have been under assault. And these political parties, which, you know, you could say in the day today of Facebook and Twitter and Internet and all that kind of stuff, why do we really need political parties to gather up opinions? I mean, they're obsolete. And so now this Democratic Party, and to a certain extent the Republican Party as well, are both trying to ensure their relevance. And what this message this sends, which is a diabolical message, is that, you know, if Team Clinton makes its way into the White House, they will be in a position to decide who gets prosecuted, who doesn't get prosecuted, who gets audited, who doesn't get audited, who gets contracts, who doesn't get audited, doesn't get contracts. And I think by this act, what Schneiderman is doing here is sending a message to Donald Trump. Listen, bub, I have your tax returns. I have them all. And I'm in a position now to sway this election, and I will. That's the message that's being sent here. And if we were living in a country where there really were three equal branches of government, where we had people who cared about equal justice, equal administration of the law, you would see good people join together on the right and the left and say, enough of this. This is nakedly partisan. This is outrageous behavior. And, you know, at minimum, what we now need to do is explore the Clinton Foundation in great depth. You know, if the Trump Foundation has issues, let's explore them. But let's also explore the Clinton Foundation, and let's get the attorneys general around this country and people who've donated from foreign countries, foreign governments, let's get them to get into these books and get these issues out there. Because, you know, I can tell you, as somebody who's been through the books, this is a massive charity fraud. It is a massive unprosecuted charity fraud where the Clintons and their trustees and others have been diverting hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars that has been raised illegally inside New York, inside this country, around the world for personal, likely for personal and political gain. It's outrageous.
Do you not feel sometimes that you're spitting in the wind because you've been raising this question and you've been documenting things, you have the records, you have the facts, but do you get a sense that anybody's listening at all who is in a position to, in fact, initiate
a very good investigation. We know that Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, that was our last report, initiated along with 64 signatories to a letter asking for an official congressional probe here. So that's interesting. But what other actions, whether in the United States or outside of it, indicate that people are moving to demand answers about how this foundation was and has been operating, and where did the money go?
Well, I think that what's going on right now, Yatrice, frankly, is that people are looking at this situation, and those in government, you know, those who have government jobs, whether they're regulators or otherwise, are trying to assess the probability of, you know, is Hillary going to win or not? And if they believe Hillary's going to win, you know, we have 8 years of history of how the Clintons treat their opponents. So, you know, those who value their government jobs are waiting, I would suspect, until the last possible minute to determine whether or not it makes any sense to do anything. I mean, after all, we have right now in the IRS, the head of the IRS is facing impeachment. You know, I think in large part over Lois Lerner and the way in which they failed to comply with congressional oversight requests. So you have a lot of people in government who are timid. You have a lot of big donors who have business with the federal government. They don't want to see their contracts yanked if Hillary wins, and they're exposed as having been Hillary opponents. So that's, I think, on the one hand, you know, the overarching theme that's making it difficult for progress to actually occur here. On the other hand, you do rightly point out that Marsha Blackburn and others, so far only Republicans, but others, do take charity fraud seriously. I mean, when charity fraud involved Africa and cancer charities, all 50 attorney generals got together, you know, working. I think Kamala Harris out in California was a very important player in that. She's a Democrat. And they all managed to get together and say, you know, charity fraud involving, you know, families getting together and creating fake charities that are stealing money from the donors instead of sending that money over to Africa to help with cancer. In a $200 million case, people got together and they put aside party differences and they said, you know, we can't let this stand, and they stopped it. You know, so that's a $200 million case. This is a $2 billion case, minimum. I think it could be as much as $100 billion when you look, you know, far and wide at all the affiliates. But so I think on the one hand, you know, people are afraid, frankly, at the highest levels of government. How do we explain Comey's behavior? How do we explain, you know, the fact that not one Democrat, no one, has come forward yet to look at this Clinton Foundation and say, you know what, you know, it certainly strikes us that there's a reasonable probability that the Clinton Foundation was engaged claiming it was fighting HIV/AIDS, but not doing so as required to, you know, to be authorized and operated, and that it may have distributed adulterated drugs that killed people. I mean, how come no Democrat has come forward to look at that stuff yet? I mean, are we back to the impeachment days where, you know, when Bill was impeached and no Democratic senator would actually look at the evidence but voted lockstep anyway to acquit him? Is that where we are again? And is that what this country needs? You know, that party labels are that important? I think the answer is that you know, you look at the crowds that, you know, that went out to see Bernie Sanders, and you look at the crowds that are going out to see Donald Trump, two people who are, you know, not really in the mainstream establishment. There's a thirst in this country for fresh thinking, for getting through these, you know, the log jams, a traditional tired old partisan rancor, and getting about finally to the process which Americans of good heart across the political spectrum, I think, will love to join hands and do, and that is to fix problems. I mean, surely we can agree, whether progressive, communist, capitalist, you know, you diehard right wing, you know, we can agree that it is a very bad thing to divert money that is supposed to go to desperately poor people, desperately afflicted people, people now in the eye of yet another hurricane down in Haiti. It is a bad thing to raise money and then divert that money and not account for that money, and not make sure that those people actually are helped. It is a very bad thing, and then to maybe make money personally off of it in speeches and deals or whatever. That's awful behavior. And, you know, I would have thought that Attorney General Schneiderman would be a lot more interested in prosecuting that type of behavior than frankly, sucking up to Hillary Clinton under a theory that she's going to win and he'll get some plum position out of it.
Well, that brings me to this question about the operations of the Clinton Foundation and its affiliated network, I guess, of so-called charities. None of these things could have happened. None of it could have happened. No way could it have happened without the Obama administration turning an eye, you know, away from it and giving it basically safe passage, giving her, Hillary Clinton, and Bill Clinton, too, safe passage. They don't have to worry. Because you then, as you go back, you see the logic of the moves that they made. Okay, so she loses the election to Obama and in 2008, and she becomes Secretary of State. No qualifications whatsoever. But it does allow her to fly around the world. And I distinctly remember doing a program just at that time when she started, and I asked the question, why is Hillary Clinton flying all over the place? Simply because it's okay for her to just get on a jet, you know, and she's got the best pilots and the best service on board, and wherever she's going, she's got the best hotels and the best security and so forth. But she would go places and we never get a report. We never hear about what exactly was the U.S. Interest in Pago Pago or Tonga. I mean, what is the diplomatic initiative there? And she spent a lot of time traveling, and we have no idea what came out of that, and there were no reports. No reports. When she was at the State Department, and an independent review board said that the State Department was a mess administratively. It was just awful because she was not paying attention to that. She was paying attention to developing her business, her consulting business, through the foundation, using taxpayer money, I'm sure, and the planes supplied by the government and taxpayer money. And we never got an accounting for what exactly came out for the U.S. in terms of diplomatic initiatives. Why was it necessary to go to all these places? And since you've been there, what exactly did you achieve? But then, you know, you see in hindsight, remember that wonderful farewell tour? I'd never, ever heard of a public servant, even a high-level public servant, conducting a farewell tour like a rock star as you leave your office, of course, to capitalize on all the seeds you had planted while Secretary of State. You have to now go and tend to them and make them grow. And she conducted this national tour. The president, and his behavior was most instructive. He was like a puppet. He just like a prop. And we talked here on the program about this just humiliating and embarrassing interview, a series of interviews, but one in particular that she did, where he's sitting there. And she says, oh, yeah, he's my buddy. And I said, there's something really wrong here. And as we look back, and you've been talking about the foundation and the things that it does, there is no question that Barack Obama and his administration gave her the green light to do whatever she wanted to do. Foreign policy was really, first and foremost, a Clinton initiative. Had probably nothing so much to do with the U.S. Interest as much as it was the Clinton interest. And it seems to me that they formulated policy based on their interests all over the world. And the president, I am absolutely certain about it, he had to have known that this foundation was running in a very, very crooked way and doing things that just did not pass the smell test. So yeah. I have to ask you, you know, as you look back, you see how the pieces fit. He's from Chicago, so is she. They come out of the political machine, et cetera, et cetera. But the Plum assignment, the offices that she has held, Hillary Clinton, I mean, the path was paved for her in the, within the Democratic Party. It wasn't that she actually went and, you know, first was she won the dog catcher, and then she went up from there within the Democratic Party system. It was that this was what the concession was between and among whom, I don't know, but it is reasonable to assume, I think, that these folks were operating on a very long-term plan, and the foundation was extremely important to this plan in terms of generating the money on the order that we have never seen as a, quote, business enterprise operating as a philanthropic entity. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're onto something big there, Yatrice. I mean, to go into Hillary Clinton's history a little bit, there are cynics among us who believe that she got her Senate seat in part as sort of compensatory damages for whatever Bill had done with his various escapades involving Monica Lewinsky, et cetera. I mean, in New York, there have been Republican senators from time to time, but it's a heavily Democratic state. And, of course, she walked all over, I think it was Rick Lazio in 2000, wasn't even a close call, and she skated to victory and then got reelected as well. From the Clinton standpoint, their arguments are, or they try, and it's to deceive those among us who don't really want to think carefully, they try the argument that, well, since she was elected in 2000 after the messes with Lewinsky and other messes with impeachment and reelected in 2006, that, you know, the public has spoken and nobody cares about these scandals. That's their thin case argument, you know, thinking that we're all, as Jonathan Gruber, I think it was, described us, that we're all, you know, basically stupid in America. Now, the truth is that, Hillary Clinton has decent academic credentials, but you're right, Yatrice. When you look through her long resume, one thing to have position, it's another thing to actually have accomplishments. What has she actually accomplished herself that is a positive thing? I mean, forget the Senate for a second, the Secretary of State. You know, what has she actually done? Is the world better off because she was Secretary of State? Is there any part of the world that's better off? And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find one. And maybe Iceland is better off because they put all their bankers in jail. But, most of their bankers in jail. But there are not any really large, important, impactful theaters in the world that are better off for her stewardship as Secretary of State. So then when you turn back to this whole issue of, you know, what was really going on? I mean, we know the history of the campaign, 2007 and 8 through June, I think 4th or so, 2008, when she stood down and decided to, you know, let Obama, you know, not challenge him at the convention and, you know, accept reality and let him be the nominee and support him. So in the period from June 2008 through 4 November 2008, the historic election, the Clinton machine grudgingly began to support Barack Obama. Obama was elected. The Obama team, which ran a very good campaign, frankly, in 2008, didn't have the ability to really understand what was going on at the Clinton Foundation. And the official stories that are out there, David Axelrod's book and other books about when it was that Team Obama made a decision to actually not consider nominating and then nominate Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, they don't square with the underlying facts. The election was held on the 4th of November. The version of the document that was in theory meant to regulate conflicts between the Clinton Foundation and her role as Secretary of State, the draft that I think is the first draft was actually signed by Valerie Jarrett on the 16th of November, 2008. You can see that for yourselves if you Google Memorandum of Understanding, Clinton Foundation, 2008 Judicial Watch. You'll see that version. It's clearly signed by Valerie, 16 November, 2008. And it makes all these comments about the state, laudatory comments about the state of the Clinton Foundation, which are just false. On the 16th of November, 2008, the Clinton Foundation, and you can look at New York State records, searching on New York State Charity Bureau. I'll give you the employee identification number, which is 31-158-0204. That's 31-158-0204. You search on that, you'll see the annual report for 2007 provides information that is not on the Clinton Foundation website that shows beyond doubt that the Clinton Foundation was basically bankrupt in 2007, in 2008. It had lost its authority to operate the big piece of its business, this vaunted HIV-AIDS thing, and had its authority to operate Massachusetts involuntarily revoked on March 31st, 2008. That you see by going to Corporation Search Massachusetts and searching on Clinton Foundation HIV-AIDS Initiative, Inc. You'll see it for yourself. So the biggest piece had its authority to operate involuntarily revoked. That piece, according to the financial statements that are not on the Clinton Foundation website but are on the New York, show clearly that everything other than that piece was hemorrhaging money. That is, its expenses were way bigger than its revenues, and that's a very serious problem for a foundation. So, you know, all the statements that are in that memorandum of understanding about it's a great foundation, and this piece is doing well, and that piece is doing well, they're all lies. You know, the foundation was not in great shape. It was not organized legally. It was not operated lawfully. It did not comply with the applicable regulations and rules. But nonetheless, this thing was cheerfully signed by Valerie Jarrett on the 16th of November, 2008. How could she possibly have known the true state of the Clinton Foundation on that date? They hadn't filed their paperwork. So the only people who knew about it were Team Clinton. And Team Clinton pulled the wool over Team Obama, is my view, on that date. So that's the first set of surprises. Now, in that time frame, allegations still are out there that members of Team Obama may have been involved in improperly trying to sell his Senate seat. So there was an investigation. People are still chasing the FBI meeting notes. I think Judicial Watch is chasing those. Valerie was interviewed. Barack Obama was interviewed in this time frame. And, you know, next thing you know, he gets inaugurated. And Valerie and the team move in to control the levers of power of the executive branch. I would have thought, you know, I don't know these people, but I would have thought, you know, they're political animals, that, you know, once they were settled in, and once the inaugural balls, you know, had been dusted off and everybody was working and trying to contend with the grievous problems that they had inherited, that somebody might have taken a look at the Clinton Foundation file and concluded, my goodness, this thing is a fraud. You know, it is not validly organized or operated, the filings are all wrong, there are mistakes, the audits are not compliant. Somebody must have looked at that. Why do I say that? Because the Clinton Foundation and this MOU was supposed to take the Clinton Global Initiative and create a new entity. But back on the 16th of November 2008, or whenever the MOU was ultimately signed, there's no provision in there to reorganize the HIV-AIDS unit, yet it was reorganized. There's no provision in it to reorganize this 50-50 joint venture deal called Alliance for a Healthier Generation, yet it was reorganized. So where are all the emails that must have been flying around? Where are all the communications or records of meetings between the Clinton Foundation representatives and the executive branch representatives above the level of Hillary Clinton, who must have been looking at the MOU and must have been looking at the facts that they now understood and said, wait a minute, this is a tremendous mess. Where are those emails? And those are certainly work-related emails, so there would be no reason to delete them. Yet it would appear that they may have been deleted. So where are they? And why wasn't Team Obama a lot more upset than they appear to have been? Why aren't they upset now over this? I mean, I would be, say the idea that a bitter rival I had beaten in an historic election would have basically jobbed me through the process of trying to convince me that I should be his Secretary of State, had jobbed me in that process, had jobbed the Senate, had presented false and materially misleading information about the status of the foundation to her fellow senators, to the regulators in New York State, and nonetheless had been confirmed by the Senate and now was my Secretary of State, I would be furious. But that's perhaps why I'm not in politics.
Well, I continue to say that I believe that Hillary Clinton from the beginning, once she was fully on board, because I do believe also that Obama, in a way, was a Clinton creation. So many of Obama's advisors and people who were planning his campaign were Clintonites, essentially. And I think he made a deal with the devil. In a way, they surprised the devil, because I think the ingenuity of the way they pulled off this election, electing Barack Obama both times, but the first time was a doozy that had never been done before. And, I mean, it was just something for the history books to the political science books, and how you could turn elections on their ear with grassroots organizing and so forth. Of course, the principal operatives in that regard have gone on to be their own multi-million dollar companies doing consulting work for people running for office. But they are Clinton operatives. So Obama didn't come in with his own crew. He came in, he was ushered into this process, and he was surrounded by Clinton people, and probably at some point said, well, wait a minute. You know, I don't need to be 100% under their thumb. I can do my thing on my own, and in a way struck out. But just the same, I believe, my news nose tells me there's something there that explains why Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton were essentially running a parallel government and enacting parallel policies without Obama's permission, if you will. But they didn't care about that, because these things were given this kind of latitude in order to accomplish their aims and objectives through the Clinton Foundation. And it is interesting that as Obama leaves office, it seems as if he's kind of contemplating the Clinton model of presidential library / consulting business practice. I don't know how he intends to function after he leaves office, but I can't help but believe that he knew, or his administration knew, the deficits that Hillary and Bill Clinton would bring, especially in her capacity as Secretary of State. But they came to terms, and the administration overlooked or decided not to even look at all about these questions that had been looming about the Clintons since their days in Arkansas. When, as governor, Bill Clinton said he had no idea whatsoever. This is about the drug business, where the government was essentially importing drugs and exporting guns to Central and South America on Bill Clinton's watch. And Bill Clinton says he knew nothing about it, not a thing about it. So since the days of Arkansas till now, you have so many scandals that these Clintons have been associated with that it automatically would incur somebody, especially a person coming into office in such a tidal wave of mass support, and a person who understood the historicity of his election, would want nothing to jeopardize that, to tarnish that. But the fact that he had the Clintons so close to him And Hillary, within the system, within his administration, and Bill, of course, working the edges, you have access, and they're able to do whatever it is they wanted to do. It doesn't seem as if the Obama administration in any way said, hey, folks, you're out of your league right now. We got to reel you in. So when he was doing the farewell tour with Hillary Clinton, I found it very odd. It is not something that any public servant would do, riding around on the taxpayer-supported plane and doing a farewell. You're not that popular in the first place. You're not a rock star. And then he served as a kind of, he really was like a prop for Hillary Clinton. So it was decided even then that she was going to run. I believe that they know something. I believe that they knew all along that this is what Hillary Clinton was doing and Bill Clinton was doing, and they allowed it to happen because maybe the Clintons have something on the Obamas. I don't know. But it is a most unusual arrangement, and there's no rational explanation for why things went so far askew from what the procedures normally would be, especially for someone at a cabinet-level position.
Yeah, I think you've hit yet again on something key. I mean, I think there's a positive set of issues and a negative set of issues. So the negative set of issues include that, you know, when we go back into the history of the Clintons, there was this episode where approximately 900 FBI files, and I think they were, if not exclusively, principally Republicans, you know, files relating to Republicans, somehow managed to find their way into the possession of this bouncer, Craig Livingston. And it's unclear how many of those files may have actually made it into view of key political operatives of the Clintons. You know, that is an acknowledged thing. There was an independent counsel who may or may not have been so independent in the end, who absolved the people involved of trying to engage in partisan activity. But there's never been a fair inquiry that I know of into whether or not the Clintons may have gotten files on Democrats. And it wouldn't surprise me. And anybody who's going to reach in and arrange for or allow under their watch for these highly sensitive documents. I mean, FBI files are very sensitive. They include unfounded allegations, suspicions, as well as, you know, more actionable items. And that's why ordinarily they're not allowed outside the possession and review of the FBI itself. So that to me is a very, you know, that's fertile ground. I'd certainly be looking at that if I had a wide berth to investigate. That's the negative issue. You know, did the Clintons somehow, through their advisors, allies, or cronies, somehow manage to acquire information concerning either Barack Obama himself or members of his key people that could be held as leverage over Barack Obama? And, you know, that's just a question. I don't know. On the positive side, you know, as a guess, Barack Obama's a smart man, Valerie Jarrett's a smart woman, and there are lots of smart people in the administration who, you know, watch what the Clintons have done. They were dead broke. You know, Barack Obama is not dead broke, has never been dead broke while president, but Bill Clinton and Hillary were. And, you know, come January 20th, 2017, it's going to be time to make some money. And, you know, you look at what the Clintons were able to do with their foundation. Is it the case, perhaps, that Team Obama thinks they could make a lot of money off their foundation? Now, in that area, I have studied the Barack Obama Foundation filings, and I can tell you that they don't appear to me to comply with the law. The purposes for which this foundation has been established are way too broad, not specific enough. And, of course, I don't know if it was under Lois Lerner or the person who followed Lois Lerner, that the application to have this nonprofit corporation be federally tax-exempt was approved by the IRS. Ordinarily, other operations like this would be turned down. I mean, the purpose of a presidential foundation is to study the time period of President Barack Obama to house the records and other memorabilia that are U.S. government property, really U.S. taxpayer property, they get housed in this Presidential Foundation and Research Center that I guess is now going to be in Chicago. That's what the purpose is ordinarily for. That's when why you would get approved. But the way I read the papers relating to the Presidential Foundation, this new one seems to have far wider general authority to pursue initiatives of almost any description going forward, and ordinarily the IRS would turn that down. So, but of course, you know, Barack Obama's IRS, maybe they're not quite as independent as they should be. So, you know, you look at this, and I got to say it reeks. It reeks whether you're a passionate Democrat or a partisan Republican. It reeks from the standpoint of, you know, people who care about equal administration, fair, you know, blind administration of the law. We have in the Clinton behavior and possibly in the Barack Obama behavior here, and maybe arguably in, you know, prior administrations, and, you know, maybe Republicans went easier on Republicans than they should have and disciplined Democrats more roughly than they should have. That kind of behavior, you know, really is out of bounds in a government that has become as big as the U.S. government is. I mean, all told, you know, most state and local governments are dependent on the federal government. So when you look at total government spending in the U.S., it's like $6 trillion, the massive amount of spending. And, you know, you can't allow the biggest actor in the global economy to go rogue all the time and to devolve into something that could easily be corrupted. So that's why I've been spending so much time on this. I appreciate, Patrice, you're letting me talk about this kind of stuff. But I think there's a gigantic morality tale here that's not a joke. It's not a trivial set of issues. It's very important. This is in the Clinton Foundation and maybe in the Barack Obama Foundation. This is charity run amok.
But as long as it makes money, seems to be the guiding principle. As long as I make money, I don't care. You know, they'll find ways to cover that up. But it's so sad that we have, you know, it's a kind of in-your-face. There's an in-your-face attitude about it, an arrogance about it. It's one thing to acquire wealth, and it's another thing to just stick it in your face and say, look, like we just played a tape yesterday of Hillary Clinton talking to a black church in a congregation in North Carolina and saying, look, my grandchildren will never have to suffer the vicissitudes of life that your grandchildren are going to suffer. And she was supposedly saying this in a spirit of, well, you know, commiserating. But she really was saying it in a way to say that I have arrived at a point where you are definitely never going to be my equal. Your children will never be my equal because we have so much money. So I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Charles. We will have so much more to share about the Clinton Foundation because you're hard at work. And there are many journalists around the world who have been digging deep overseas and right here, too, in the U.S., about the Clinton Foundation, because it seems the more you dig, the more you find. And that is that's the problem. The more you dig, the more you find. So we will be talking soon again about your latest update from the paperwork on the Clinton Foundation and its labyrinth of affiliations. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Patrice.
Thanks. And that brings us to the end of the program. I hope you are gathering things as we go. This is very, very important information, and it's coming from an extremely important source who has taken the time. This Charles Ortel at Charles Ortel, ORTEL.com. He posts all of his backup information there so you can go and inspect it yourself. Thanks so much. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID Stories, at gmail.com. We'll see each other tomorrow. A good program planned for you. Bye-bye.